Daniel Brinkley is the author of The Secrets of the Light, Saved by the Light, At Peace in the Light. He's loved and respected worldwide for inspirational lectures on the near-death experience. His hospice care and complementary and alternative healing practices and also self-awareness. Since 1977, Danyan has worked diligently looking for the very best way to integrate conventional and complementary medicine. Now, having survived numerous brushes with death, we'll talk about that, Danyan is an expert in the dying process. He was struck twice by lightning and has since survived heart failure, open heart surgery, ruptured hematomas, brain surgery, and a massive grand mal seizure. The first lightning strike radically changed his life, and Danyan became a hospice and nursing home volunteer. The past 25 years of volunteer service, he has been at the bedside of more than 340 people at the point of death and more than 1,200 during their final days, and he has accrued more than 16,000, count that, 16,000 hours of service. Our guest tonight, the very enlightened Danyan Brinkley. Hi, Danyan. How are you?
Hello, George. How are you?
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks for having me. I mean, I was thinking earlier today how much I appreciate this kind of support. It's 11/11, it's veterans, and this is the, like, a second time, you know, a third of time that this has happened from all of you to give me this opportunity, and I so much appreciate it, George.
Well, you deserve it, because anybody who comes back from death the amount of times you have deserves it, believe me.
Well, you know, going through this, like being 54 years old and going through this experience and being so many hours at the bedside and seeing the other side of life, you know, being able to lift out of your body and go down the tunnel and explore all those realms that we call the heavens, and to be able to look at it from that perspective, then it's not so heroic what I do, because I understand the method by which you leave the world and many of the things that happen when you're in that spirit world. And so for me to be able to fulfill this mission given to me so long ago and to be a part of changing people's focus on death from a place of conversation as opposed to a place of fear. You know, George?
You know, by the way, you know, right before I introduced you, I was serious. I was going to say dead serious. I better not use that word around you.
Nope, it's not right.
But I was serious. You have that look about you that you have seen the face of God. I mean, when you walk, you kind of look like you've got a flashlight on you.
People say that, George, you know, and I think it's something that's passing through me and out into the world because, you know, we're multidimensional. But I have been at a place where I have seen the heavens. I have seen it. And I have a serene place about that there's a life after death. It's a glorious methodology that takes us there. And it all comes back to the power and might of us as spiritual beings. And people say that. I mean, people would say that in the 1975. They could see this place. But we all have it in us, and we all have the knowledge of looking at it. And as we look at death, and we start to really get involved in looking at it and having conversations about it, we'll all begin to develop that knowledge and understanding that comes with knowing unequivocally there's a life after this one.
Long-standing Coast listeners know who you are, Danyan, but we get now hundreds of thousands of new people who have joined us every month.
Well, welcome.
And they have not had an opportunity to hear you and really don't know your past and what happened to you. Let's go back a little bit, if you can, at around, what was it, 1975?
Right.
So what happened to you?
Well, in 1975, I was living in South Carolina. I was living in my own little isolated, arrogant, pompous world. And, you know, 25 years old, Superman, had very little knowledge about spiritual matters other than fundamentalist Southern evangelical perspective, you know, which concludes that everybody goes to hell in South Carolina, you know, that whole mindset, and never thought about it, and went on about my life, living it totally devoid of any kind of connection to what we're talking about tonight. And so then I was talking on the telephone, and I was hit in the neck by, just in the lower, above my neck, right at the edge of my head, side of my head, I was hit in the side of the head, and it went down my spine. And it went through my body. It welded the nails of the heels of my shoes to the floor, throws me in the air, suspends me in air, and slams me back on the down on the bed. I was paralyzed. I was dead for 28 minutes.
Oh, my God. Now, lightning, boom.
Yeah. Completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months. Took 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. But I had this first experience. I had never heard of it, George. I wouldn't have believed it if anybody told me. Because what I always say about it is one day I never believed any of it, the next day I was dead, and the day after that I became everything I never believed. And I lifted out of my body and I watched what was going on, and I was in that place that I call the blue-gray place, and it's where you're releasing from the physical world and attaching to the spiritual world. And in that blue-gray place, I was watching what was going on. I was comfortable. I wasn't afraid. I wasn't on fire. I wasn't burning. I was safe. I knew this place. And it was just amazing. You know, you don't really realize you're dead when you're first dead. You don't really realize.
Well, that's true. I mean, you
feel so much better
about
yourself.
You're all over the place.
When you're dead.
Yeah.
You know, you feel better about yourself. And I was looking at this, and then I remember them loading me in the ambulance and the paramedics, you know, talking. I remember that. And then the next thing I remember was a tunnel and moving down this tunnel and coming into this magnificent presence, an energy that was so magnificent and so safe, and I was so connected to it. It made me feel bigger and greater than I really am, but that freedom. And then the looking at this realm and really acclimating myself to it, then realizing that I was dead. I mean, that's when you realize it. Then meeting these beings and having the life review. Everybody's going to have this panoramic life review, George. And it's the greatest teaching tool that anybody could listen to and understand to change how they view their life. Because perspective is the only thing anybody can gain or take away from their life.
Well, it sounds like you were enjoying this experience when it was happening to you.
Well, it was a whole lot better than being on fire and burning and paralyzed, lying in the bedroom.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, and I'm out. And it was wonderful. I never wanted to come back, and neither will you, and neither will anyone that's listening. There is nothing about that. A lot of people are told or given a choice whether to stay or come. I'm glad they didn't do that with me.
Why didn't they give you the choice?
Well, because I would have probably stayed, and I would have never gotten back here to keep moving forward the fact that there is a life after death, and we just have to look at the space between here and when we get to the lifting out of our body. And to reduce the fear, I really believe, George, that this next 7 years and it is so paramount in our understanding of ourselves and the world. You know, if you know Saved by the Light, which was the book I wrote in 1993, and it gave the prophecies, the things that I saw when I was on the other side, when I went to the Crystal Cities, and I traveled to these realms, you know, on the other in what we would call the heavens. You lift out of your body, you move down the tunnel, you come into the place of light. You have a life review. You see your entire life pass before you. You have missed nothing. You see every single event that's ever occurred. You watch it in a holographic viewpoint. You feel every experience all simultaneously. Then you watch it from a second person point of view. And then you literally become every person you ever encounter.
Now, when you watch this, do you sometimes shake your head going, why did I do that?
Oh, God, 95% of the stuff I looked at was for that reason. You know, I was just a jerk, you know. And
I've gotten to know you. And, you know, I've met you a couple times. You don't come across, by any means, as a jerk. I can't imagine you as one.
No, George, trust me. You can. I was. I thought that if I knocked you out, or if it was too much trouble, if I shot you, it would settle the issue a lot quicker.
You were that bad?
Oh yeah.
My God, Daniel.
Well, you know, hey, I was that bad and worse than that, George.
You're lucky you saw the light instead of the brimstone.
Well, you know, I've studied the aspects of heaven because I always thought of hell because if I thought I was going there, if anybody was going there, it was me. But the reason why I wrote The Secrets of the Light is that when you start looking at all the experiences and spending now 27 years studying the near-death experience, you know, Raymond had just written his book in 75, Dr. Moody, on life after life, which gave the term NDE. And then I met him about 2 months before that book came out. And I guess I've been on the wave of this phenomena, both as a participant in it and a observer of it. And when you look at death so much, you know, continuously look at it and explore it, then you realize that you change because you want to. You change because you gain a greater spiritual insight to life's purpose and life's meaning. So when I wrote The Secrets, it was to give people the way I look at events. Death adds a tremendous perspective.
You also, and we'll talk about that later on in the program, but you came up with some pretty startling revelations about some things, and we'll get into that because I want to know how that came to you and how really steadfast you think some things will be. I mean, as things happen in the future, I've always thought they can be changed.
Yeah, altered. I think that I said, George, that it's not carved in stone, but starting 30 years ago, 29 years ago, and watching these things, and then there are people who track them, like Beth Clay, who is she was a senior staffer on the House Oversight and Reform Committee, and she's a brilliant researcher. And she studies these things. She looks at predictions, and it's like her hobby, but she's done extensive study on the prophecies, more than I would have. But I can see things that I missed. But I was in 1975, and these prophecies came to me in a vision when I was dead. So not only at the fact that they've been so accurate through the years, and they literally show us the trends, but they also prove that something was happening when I wasn't breathing or didn't have a pulse. And when you see those, we had until 2004. I said this in 1976. I wrote this stuff down. I put it in Saved by the Light in 1993, and where the world would be in 2004, and what we would have to do, or we would sit on the precipice of a world war, or a period of ultimate growth spiritually and identity of who we are and our place in the heavens or in the cosmos. And darned if it's not right there.
And, of course, some of those events continue to unfold in the future. Well, when you were finally, when you finally came back from this near-death experience, what was that like? Was that horrible for you?
Oh, it was horrible. No one ever wants to return to a paralyzed body, 25 years old, and they sent me home to die, George. No one had ever taken that much electricity, been struck by lightning that direct with that much electricity.
How long were you in the hospital?
I spent about a month there.
Oh, my God.
Well, it was just time to go home. You know, they send you home. I lost 50 pounds, and I would lay, and it took me months and months to learn to move and to walk. And, you know, at 25 years old, I went from Superman to nothing. And I spent years struggling with it. But I had seen another world, and I knew that I could make a difference. Like all of us, you know we can.
How did you know at that time you weren't imagining that other world?
Well, by the time I was 25 years old, I had seen reality. You know, I had been a part of a bunch of things. That was the evolution of America from 1969 to 1975, and most of it's what you call proxy wars.
Yeah.
But you have to have support logistics. So I had seen reality. And it was amazing to me because I am as cynical and as a skeptical a person, George, as you'll ever meet. I don't believe half the stuff I see in the world that I live in on the lecture tour and listening to people. But I'll study it. I'll look at it and I'll watch it. Well, I had 2 years lying in the bed to think about that near-death experience because there's nothing else I could do. To not wet my pants, to be able to make the 5 or 6 steps to the bathroom was a miracle in my life at that time.
For 2 years you were bedridden?
It took me 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. I mean, maybe I could get up and walk for 100 steps or something, and then be 2 days before I could do it again.
Did you wish that you had died?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only did I wish that I had died, I resented the fact of that where I had seen and knew was real, and I was back here living this.
Did you ever contemplate doing yourself in?
I didn't contemplate doing myself in until the third experience when it was brain. You know, it was too, when I had brain surgery.
Well, and the second, of course, was another lightning bolt, wasn't it?
No, it was an open heart surgery.
Okay, how old were you when that happened?
I was 40. Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, Daniel.
See, it's interesting, George, that when you look at the trend, and I look at this all the time because there's so much about the cosmology of it I don't understand. But first it was lightning. That would be my ethereal or spiritual self. The next one was heart, my open heart surgery, which would be the center of my heart.
Yeah.
The third was my mind. Each one of these things, these scenarios, played a curious part in the mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of me in symbology. You know, if you're trying to look at the symbolism, and when you sit and look at it, you know, when you sit alone by yourself, you will watch to see the symbology. I was struck by lightning on September the 17th at 7.05 p.m., 1975, during a Wednesday afternoon during a thunderstorm. I got struck by lightning again in May of 1978. It only knocked me unconscious for 45 minutes.
I mean, what are the odds of one person getting hit twice? And it does happen, but the odds are astronomical.
Like 60 million.
Yeah.
But I didn't get it the first time, George. You know, they got to kill me again to kind of keep my perspective in proper focus.
I wonder if you're a receptor to lightning.
Well, I can't argue the point. You know, when you get struck by lightning twice on a telephone in your bedroom, two different houses, 8 miles apart, they get your attention.
Well, you weren't talking to the same person, were you?
Uh-uh.
Okay. Then I was going to blame that person.
I still blame him, George. I still blame him. And when I had the second experience, the two lightning strikes led to the weakening of my heart. Then I got a staph infection, and it ate the center valve. And in 1989, I'm 40 years old, and I'm drowning in my own blood.
Oh, my. Your heart's just pumping it into your system.
Exactly. So I get to the hospital. I have emergency open heart surgery. They say that I could live 9 months, and then they would, if I did live that month, they were going to go in and take a muscle out of my back and wrap it around my heart, and then I would lose 60% of my left side, but I would be alive. Forget that.
Yeah.
And so from that in 1989, that was May 30th, 1989, at 10 a.m. I went into surgery. Now listen to this, George. This is funny now.
I got about a minute.
Okay, at 10 a.m.
Yeah, go ahead.
10 a.m. I went in for the surgery. September the 17th at 7.05 a.m., 1997, on a Wednesday morning due to a thunderstorm, 22 years and 12 hours later, I had brain surgery, and they drilled the first hole at the exact direct straight line from where the lightning struck me in 1975. Now, you tell me, if you sit alone by yourself in an afternoon, you think about that, and try to figure out exactly what cosmic symbology that is.
Yeah, really. Somebody's wanting to tell you something.
Or for me to tell everybody else.
That's exactly right. Stay with us, Daniel. Daniel Brinkley, our guest. The latest book is called The Secrets of the Light. Fascinating one. And later on tonight, we're going to talk about his revelations. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast. Daniel Brinkley, our guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Daniel, how many people, when they die, do you believe, in talking about the near-death experience when they die, like you did, come back as enlightened as you did? Does that happen to a lot of people?
Well, you know, George, yeah. But we all operate with different talents. You know, some people are more dedicated and some go deeper into the experience. But the key is the profound change in their ability to love. This is the key. And when you study it, because I've been studying this in countries, you know, I've been in probably 20 countries. And being a part of Raymond Moody and the adventure that it was on in the early days when no one believed it, you had a chance to hear some of the purest stories ever told from children with Melvin Morris and my co-author of the first two books, Paul Perry, and doing these studies, you really got a chance to hear the purest points of the near-death experience. And it was about the ability to give more love and to perceive more love and to try to make the world not a fear-based place, but a place of love. So I think there are a lot of people that come back. You know, they don't become as prominent, I guess, but they still work in their communities and they're still making a difference. You know, George, when I was trying to figure this out, and I'm always trying to figure it out because it's happening to me, but when I first started looking at it, I started looking at lightning shamans because I went to Peru and I was in Peru looking, following this trail, much like the Celestine Prophecy and James Redfield, but following this trail of death, looking at how the Incas viewed death. And this guy came up, one of these guides, and he started talking. Someone was telling him the story, and he started talking, saying Iyapa, Iyapu, which is the lightning. And he told me this tradition of lightning shamans. And then I started looking at lightning shamans and see that there's a cultural history of what happens to people like me. And now the National Institute for Health and the Offices of Rare Diseases and Disorders, run by a guy named Steve Groff, has Calamino medicine, that people struck by lightning have these rare empathic, become psychic, intuitive, they develop different brain chemistry. These things happen. So I think that a lot of people who get struck by lightning, or the fact that cardiopulmonary resuscitation brings us back. But once you know you don't die, George, and you take as much electricity to really energize your etherical body, mm-hmm. And you take that kind of charge, and you know you don't die, then you do change. You're open to broader understanding and a wider view of life because you have experienced what usually conditions your perspective based on fear, pain, or death.
Is your body still loaded with so much electricity?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you, for example, walk up to touch a doorknob, a metal one, do you get sparked?
Well, a lot of times that, or I can tear your computer up. I mean, you can ask my two girls, Nan, Adriana and Angel, I mean, who live around me all the time, and they have to dial the phone for me. If I'm excited and I run to pick the phone up, it goes dead. I can punch the numbers on a touchtone phone, and there's no. I'm calling somebody in Afghanistan as opposed to in Indiana, and you just this happens. But this is not it's not bad though, George, because it happens to a lot of other people.
Well, that's true.
But George, I want to say something. I was looking in the After Dark, and I know I'm not supposed to change the subject, but I was looking in the After Dark, and I was reading your story about the adventure of George Norrie. A one-way trip.
Oh, yeah.
You're a great man, George Norrie.
Nah.
And you express your heart and you tell people what you're going through. I can sense what you're going through is as you are overwhelmed by the greatness that's coming your way and the true accolade of you building this show after art. You know, and it's you allowing us to explore with you. The same thing I try to do. You know, people really want to know the truth and explore it. But in the worlds within our worlds, the Hollow Earth theories in the After Dark magazine.
Yeah.
In 1985, when I was in Peru, I had gone to the World's Fair, and they had the World's Fair in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I had met these people named the Bozas, who had put on had funded the exhibition for Peru, and they had an archaeologist, the head of us of archaeology. His name was Dr. Jimenez Borta. So I went back to Peru in 85 and was going with Dr. Jimenez Borda and listened to his stories.
Did they invite you back? Were you a guest?
Yeah.
Okay.
And when you listen to this man, this brilliant 75-year-old archaeologist, the stories of the Hollow Earth theories, they are real as you can be.
Oh, yeah.
I went in the temple fortress of Sacsayhuama, just outside of Cusco. In 1985, you could walk inside that turkey, George, and you could go 5 and 6 miles in tunnels. And these tunnels were hewn, and they were done beautifully. I mean, they weren't the perfect like you would, you know, imagine like if aliens did it.
Right.
But these tunnels went miles. I walked probably 3 miles into these tunnels, and you lose your sense of balance.
In direct, it's pitch black, isn't it? Other than the light you brought.
A lot of it, a lot of times, but then there are hues that reflect that you can see a long way down those tunnels with one light. But now they seal it off. They say you can't go in there. And this probably happened in 88 when they closed those off. But before 1985, you could walk through these tunnels. Dr. Jimenez Borta told so many stories about them. So as I looked in the After Dark, this is a real world for those who explore that if they're interested. It's a real world because I've seen it myself.
What if you got lost, couldn't get back?
That's why I turned around and came back, George.
Oh, yeah. In both ways.
I didn't know enough about, yeah. I'd heard enough Jules Verne, but, I was not interested. I was not so inclined as that was my study, Like a lot of people, look at a lot of different things to give themselves validity. And why Coast to Coast AM is so great is it lets people make and gives them their choice and gets the information out to them, and then they either empower themselves or, become proactive in looking and studying from crop circles to the death experience. And it's what makes it great.
Well, the mysteries of the mind, it opens up people to sit back and think.
And move outside of the box.
Absolutely.
We have to do that.
Speaking of that, did not Art come and see you when you were on your deathbed at one point?
Oh, Art and Ramona.
Yeah. And now, what circumstance was that?
I was brain surgery. When I went in, I flew back from L.A. I'd come to L.A. and created Compassion in Action, the Twilight Brigade,
right,
which was my mission. It's part of if you've read Saved, I'm on a mission, like everybody has a mission, to fulfill a vision, to put in place what I call spiritual activism, which is volunteerism, a way that you can make a living by doing service first, and then being able to be moved into arenas where you make a living, and then these centers, so that the veil between the world that we live in and the world I've seen is lifted. And this was what was put on me. I said this in 1975. I wrote it in 1992 in Saved, it's called The Final Vision in Chapter 5. And in 1992, where people, I guess, follow so much of what I do, is I do what I say, George. I'll do what this vision told me to do, what I saw from these 13 beings of light. I stay true to that, and I will accomplish this no matter how many times they kill me or I kill me. I will accomplish it. So, you still there?
Yeah.
So, when these things happen, and you see... Forgot what we were talking about.
No. I wanted to know that when people die, especially those people who don't believe. Let me rephrase that. People who don't believe in things that have happened to you and other people who have died. How do you convince them that there's something over there?
Well, the convincing comes in them finding something that makes sense, that I can answer the question. You see, because it's all about perspective, George. I've been at the bedside. I took what I saw, and my mission was to reduce fear.
Okay, but as you were there because of the surgery, and Art's
there.
Well,
we were talking about when Art...
Yeah, and Art, okay, and Art and Ramona are there. There were a lot of things that he found hard to believe during that period of time.
Sure, Art is as skeptical and as cynical as I am. It's why we get along so well. And Art's a little jaded. What? I love this man. He
I
and
know
Ramona,
you
George, you, they saved my life. Here's the story. And I'm sorry I got off track and forgot.
No. I got you back on.
I appreciate it. But
hey, going through what you've gone through, you can forget.
Give me a little latitude.
Absolutely.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. But when Art, because we became good friends, because Art always said he never believed all this stuff. And then one day Art was going through a crisis and we were talking, and the things I was telling Art, there was no way anyone could know it. No way you could know it. And I told him, Art, I said, look, it's empathic. I have that intuitive ability, and he was sitting talking about it, and there was no way I could know it. And then I came to his house because people when something happens in your life, you need some support.
Absolutely.
And I told him I didn't want to hear anything he had to say. I was coming to see him. So I got there, and we were sitting at Art's, and I don't know if I'm supposed to tell the story, but I am. And Art was going through a crisis, and Ramona was sitting next to him, and he said, "What is that letter?" And it was on his table, and Mona picked it up and handed it to me, and I handed it to him, and I said, "Oh, I'll tell you what the letter is." And I told him what the letter mm-hmm. said and what it had, and Art opened it up. And he looked at it. He knew there was no way I could know. The envelope was sealed. All I did was touch it, and I described it and the person who brought it. And he was the funniest, coolest guy. He was so cool.
Rumors are true. Is this true that when you were on your deathbed, he videotaped you?
Oh, yeah. Art came after that friendship came to develop, Art and I got to be close friends. And when I got to the hospital, they were calling because people were asking about it. People had heard about it. You know, it was getting out into the news and into the media. And I think Art called Mel, or Mel called Art. And Art talked to the doctor, and they gave me an 8% chance of survival.
God.
And Art got on a plane, he and Mona, and they came to me. Just the same, giving back his friends, look after each other. And it was tough, George. I mean, I had an 8% chance of surviving, but I was in more pain than I had ever imagined. And I had endured pain by the time I was 47 years old, and I could not bear it. Like you asked me earlier about this suicide business, I had to do something. They would have to do open heart surgery and brain surgery at the same time.
Oh, that's almost impossible.
Well, yeah, there was 8% chance. If a doctor gives you an 8% chance, what's he really telling you?
Yeah, he said,
"You're dead.
You're dead, babe."
Yeah, that's the end of it. And Art and Ramona came, and Art got on the radio, and he was. I told him that I didn't tell him, but he was doing one of his experiments.
Yep. Yep.
About prayer, and it was the most remarkable event, one of the most remarkable events I've had in this lifetime. When these people were praying, and I wasn't even aware of it, George. I wasn't aware because I was in so much pain. By then, it had been 10 days or 12 days, and they didn't know what to do because if they went in to do the surgery, I'd be dead because my blood was too thin, and then the clots in the prosthesis valve that I have. It was just a mess. And Art got people to pray, and I could see this silver-blue color in the room, and the pain would reside. And it wouldn't last long, maybe 10 or 12 minutes. It would reside, and I could at least catch a breath and get some kind of semblance of my life, trying to hold on because I was in trouble. And Art and Ramona stayed through the whole thing, through the surgery. They got people to continuously pray in their own way.
He's got your goodbye on tape just in case.
Right? Yeah. Well, it was a... You know Art, the consummate reporter.
He's got this tape of you saying, "I'm checking out."
Just before I went, just before I went into surgery, he has also. He took another picture of me when I lost pulse.
We got to play that tape that he's got of you saying goodbye.
Whoa, I'd love to hear it. I mean, but he took a photograph. This is Art. I'm in there going into cardiac arrest, and Art's in the operating room taking a photo of it. Don't you love him? He and Ramona.
He is something.
And Ramona brought me this aromatherapy, and it was so wonderful. And you just think so much about those are hard times.
He sent me a week and a half ago, and I won't get into what it was, but he sent me one of the neatest emails I've ever seen, and he just doesn't know how much I appreciate some of the things.
I love him. I'll talk to him in every couple of weeks. You know, we'll talk to each other.
I got to get that tape from him, though.
Yeah, please, George. I think it'd be cool if it's a videotape, too, boy.
We'll get it dubbed to audio. I mean, do we hear you talking and things
like
that?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
You know, it's me. It was the last will and testimony because...
Maybe we'll get him to play it on one of his weekend shows.
Well, I'll leave that up to you.
The whole thing. That's up to him. No, nobody tells him.
Well, I understand. I know Art Bell. I love him, too.
Anyway, let's get... I've got to, before you're off with me at the end of the program, of course, we've got to talk about really some of these things that you have seen in the future. But how are you now able to do this? Are you... Do you have to, is this in a near-death experience that you see these things?
You mean the boxes of knowledge?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you can't do it tonight if you meditate?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you meditated tonight, can you see futuristic things?
And I have to have something that triggers it.
Okay.
If something in the event, just like Yasser Arafat's dying, that would trigger part of the vision. That would be box 4 and 5.
I see.
And it would be the Middle East, and it would trigger because now comes the whole nature of, like, if you look at it from the New Testament, from the Book of Revelations, Israel is about to become a nation. When Israel adapts itself as a nation, and if you look at the Balfour Agreement, which was the British mandate that was to create a Palestinian state, you know, not an Israeli state, and under the United Nations laws or that was set forth under United Nations rules, that under the Balfour Agreement, Israel would truly become a recognized nation state when a Palestinian state is established. Okay.
All right. Then that could happen soon.
Well, guess what happens when, if you believe the Christian perspective of the evangelical, we're in the final days of the tribulation.
Well, exactly. If all this comes to pass,
isn't it exciting?
Well, I don't know. It's exciting. It's scary. It's somewhat frightening.
It's almost like your first date.
Well, let me see. I can't even remember my
first. Well, if you've been dead, George, it's exciting. We just have to learn to keep certain things in focus, like these shows, listening to Alex Jones, listening to George Norrie, and listening to Death and Dying, and keep the proper perspective, and we will see a grand evolution of our consciousness, or we will be in the middle of a war that won't stop for 10 years.
Too long.
That's what I say. So, like being on this program and me, I'm doing the VA and I have some great VA stories I want to tell. But this is about giving a chance to change consciousness. I saw the future. I didn't know it was the future then, George. When I wrote this stuff down, I didn't know what it was. I was still trying to acclimate the fact that the minister was telling me I needed to see a psychiatrist and the psychiatrist was telling me I needed to see a minister, trying to describe what I knew happened to me. And everybody in my family and in South Carolina wanted it to go away and me go back to being who I was.
And each time this happened, did you get a little more enlightened?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Stay with us. Danyon Brinkley, our guest, back with him. My gosh, what a fast hour. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Danyon Brinkley, our guest. Your phone calls as well. Are you happy with the direction of the spiritual world that so many people are trying to get into right now, Danyon? Are we going the right way?
I really am, George. I mean, you can look at the political situation of, you know, it's a good way to look at the politics, the reds and the blues. I mean, to look at the amount of people and where this country is, it's evenly divided. And when it's evenly divided and you're going to have Social Security, the IRS, Medicaid, Medicare, and everything that we've built our security on in the last 60 years in this country is on the presidential agenda to transform.
It's all going to change.
Our world is going to change. And I believe, like this show, and I believe like the support of people giving compassion and action and the conscious caring will change and overpower what appears to be World War III. But, George, I want to say something. Because when we were talking about the oil supply and oil going to
150, huh?
Yeah, 150 to 200. I know people listen to me, that especially people who've been with me a long time, and they know I follow these predictions, and you know, they can go to the website and see. But in this oil business, the world oil reserves. This is what the vision. This is as much as I could get from the vision. The amount of oil that all the major oil companies say they have is less than 50%. They don't have all the oil they say they have.
Do they know this?
Probably they know it.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Well, it's true. But here's the bet. Wait now, George. Look at it the other way. If this is going to happen, because we don't have any more fossil fuel, and we've burnt 950 billion barrels, and we're burning 27 million barrels a day, then there is no way we can't stop right now and realize we're going to exhaust this as China industrializes. That's the end of it. As China industrializes, the amount of fossil fuel that's going to be burnt will be unbelievable. Well, then the opportunity for us to really start pressing for alternate fuel sources and energy sources and bring these alternate energies forth by word, by letter, by writing, by talking, force the industry to find alternatives, because this is going to happen. But I didn't mean to take so much time, George, but people listen to me, and I don't want to be flippant with things as people decide their lives based on watching me and seeing these visions.
Okay, let's go to the call. So many people calling for you. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on with Danyon Brinkley. Hi there.
Hi there, George.
Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Where are you calling from?
I have a question for Danyon.
Sure. Tell us where you are.
Oh, I'm in Ohio.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
What city, by the way?
Danyon, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I have a question.
Okay.
Personally, I got ptomaine poisoning out of a can of the soup, and I was rushed to the hospital because I couldn't walk. You know, how you
that's
get ptomaine
poison.
Poisoning. And they took my blood test, and then they put me on IVs right away. And then the doctor came back about 3 hours later, and he said, the bad news is you've got ptomaine poisoning. He said, but the good news is, he says, you know, I don't understand this. He said, I range blood in between 1 and 15. He said, mine's only a 13. He said, yours is lacking 1 point of being a 17. He said, are you sure you're, he said, where were you born? He said, you weren't born in the United States, were you? And I said, yes. And he says, no. Excuse me, were you born on this earth?
Like
he thinks that you're alien?
Just because of her reading, I guess, huh?
No, I mean, this is what the doctor said. I have evidence.
You should have been dead?
With ptomaine poisoning, he says, but my blood was like almost a 17, lacking one little point. He says normal blood is like 1 through 15, and he says mine's only a 13. That's what the doctor said, you know.
So where do you think this anomaly came from?
Well, I was born dead.
What do you mean you were born dead?
I was born. I was dead for 22 minutes. And
jeez.
Yeah.
So your body had built up a consciousness protective system.
Do you really think
so? To
that
ptomaine poisoning.
Right, yeah, because I used to have leukemia, too. I had that 18 years ago, and my blood was below a 3. And then within 3 months' time, I had it boosted up and back to work at Sears.
What do you think caused the depletion of the, what's this, the red blood cells?
I used to have leukemia.
Okay, makes sense.
I gotta say, Danyon, you know, it's remarkable how many people, even if they're little babies, have these after life experiences.
Oh, Melvin Morris, you know.
Or should I say after death experiences?
Yeah, or near death
really
experiences.
Near death, yeah.
Because here at Melvin Morris, a pediatrician, has resuscitated 300 kids. He and Paul wrote a book called Closer to the Light. He's not trying to fool anybody. He's not trying to scam somebody. He's not selling snake oil. He's resuscitated these kids and followed some of them for 15 years. And you can read what he's saying and listen to these kids. And there's no such thing. These kids aren't hallucinating. You know, I've listened to so many cases, George, through the years. I can tell when it's something other than a near-death experience, although they may relate it to that, because I've been around death every day. I live in it because I can help people not be afraid. The books I write and the lectures and the programs that I do is all about that, and then recruit hospice volunteers. But when you see how many people are out there who's had this experience, and it starts from little kids to 90-year-old fundamentalist Baptist, that was a funny story this old man told me. He was 91 years old, a fundamentalist Bible-thumping. The world was invented in 6,000 years, no such dinosaurs. That's dinosaurs are the works of the devil.
A lot of people believe that.
Well, hey, he did. He was 91 years old till he had that heart attack. And when he came back in the room after being the biggest grump, he started telling Bobby, he said, "Can I talk to you?" And I said, "Sure." And he sat down and he started telling the story of having this near-death experience and seeing his wife and how so wonderful it was. And he'd forgotten how beautiful she was and wouldn't be long, but it was, I had to take care of my son and get some things together. Nobody could believe the change in his personality. He didn't freak out. He accepted what had happened. He tried to log a lot of Christian concepts to it. But he had this experience. And George, if you were standing there and you saw him before and after, and you knew he didn't have any, he wasn't faking anybody because he's dying, and then you see the transformation and the description he has, you accept it. You don't go to listening to a bunch of scientists and doctors. You go to listening to people who haven't had experience.
Well, that's true. Wild card line, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello. Nope, that's not going to work. Poor guy was on hold for a while. There's our second wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, good morning, George. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Hey, Daniel. Nice to hear you on the radio. I'm so glad you're on the show tonight because I tried to get in with George a few weeks ago and I couldn't get through, and this is the perfect topic. Because,
thank you.
First of all, do you think it's possible, and I'll tell you my story, do you think it's possible to have a near-death experience without death being involved?
Sure.
Because what happened to me is when I was a young kid, my father left when I was 8, and my mom kicked me out when I was 15. And
you
I lived
probably
outside.
Had it coming, though.
Do what?
You probably had it coming when
no,
he kicked you out.
No, not really. My mom, she had a lot of problems in her family, and I think she just got to the point she couldn't do it anymore. But she kicked me out, and I lived outside in the wintertime in an abandoned car.
Whoa.
And I lived there for a couple months, and I remember clearly I was just devastated. I was starving. I was freezing. And, you know, I've never had to believe in God because I've always known. As crazy as that may sound, I've never had to believe. I've always known.
Like
and
many
I remember,
of us, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was sitting in that car, and then finally one day I remember it was in the late afternoon, and I looked up to the sky, and I was just freezing cold. I had nowhere to go, no one to help me, and I looked up to the sky, and I said, "You know, God, you know I believe in you." I said, "You know I know you're there." And I said, "And I'm going to ask for your forgiveness because I can't do this anymore." And what I was going to do is I was going to kill myself. And immediately when I said that and I asked him to forgive me, all of a sudden everything around me went black. Now, you can say I fell asleep, you can say whatever, but everything around me went black. And I remember the darkness because it was so silent, I couldn't hear anything. And I remember I was petrified, and I couldn't see nothing, and I held my hand up in front of my face, and I couldn't see it. So I kept moving my hand forward thinking it was going to focus, and it didn't. As a matter of fact, I touched my face and scared myself because I realized I couldn't see anything. And then when I started feeling around, I was trying to figure out where I was in this car. And I tried to kick the windows out. I tried to open the doors. I could not get out. And I remember I was just utterly terrified. I was just screaming. And I remember I sat down finally, and I looked back up in the darkness, and I said, "God," I said, "what does this mean?" And then all of a sudden, everything got so bright. I mean, like a light I have never experienced in my life. Got so bright. And I heard a voice, and the voice told me, "If you kill yourself, this will be your eternity. You have to go back and live your life." And it changed my life.
I can understand. Congratulations for changing your life.
And that's not the first time. I've been saved a couple times, and I definitely feel like there was another force there saving me.
Like an angel type force? Angelic force?
Yeah, because I was two stories up on a building, actually 2.5 stories up, and I walked to the edge to get on a fully extended ladder that was extended off of the first story, and I started to get on the ladder, and in my ear I heard someone say, "Don't get on the ladder, it's going to fall." And I just thought I was tired, it was windy out, so I turned around, stepped on the ladder fell, and as I fell, I looked up and I said, "You know, God, forgive me." And immediately somebody grabbed me from behind. And arms were so big that my arms were literally standing up, bent at the elbows. And I remember going down, and I remember looking down, and then I tried to look behind me because I thought, well, if he's got me, you know, who's got him? and there was nothing there.
That's great.
Hey, thanks for the call. What is it about that intuition or whatever it may be, Danyon, that tells us, don't do this, you're going to regret it, and you don't, maybe sometimes we do, and then you do regret it. But what is it? What's that power?
It's guardians. We live in dimensional reality. I mean, it's dimensions. There is a world, it's quantum physics has already proven that there is a world less than an eighth of an inch from us. It can be measured. And it's around us, and they say it's up to 11 worlds. It's dimensions. Beings can live in other dimensions, George, because I see these dimensions all the time. It has a lot to do with where planets are, because I've learned this. It has a lot to do with barometric pressure and what the dew point is, and I can see these other dimensions. So when it is that dimensional, there are guardians or beings who are working along with us that can interfere, or not interfere, but intercede in and help us and watch us. I believe we work in teams. I believe that it comes in a group, because as I keep studying this near-death experience and studying the cultural history and the anthropology of death and how it affects societies and civilizations, you really come to realize that there is so much else going on around us, and that we are just not aware of it because we're so conditioned not to look there.
Good point. First time caller line, you're on. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
From Vancouver, BC.
BC, go ahead.
Yay.
Hi, Danyon.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Another tricky day in paradise, but hopefully people are buying this book all from George's website.
Well, it sounds great.
They will over the next few days. They always do.
My name is Marie.
Hi, Marie.
And I'm just wondering if I can ask you. My mother passed away just over 10 years ago.
Right.
And I'm wondering if it's possible for you to ask her if she has any message for me.
Okay. Give me a second.
Mm-hmm.
When she passed away, let me find to see if I have her. When she passed away, was she a heavyset lady like a jovial heavyset lady?
No, that would be my grandmother.
Okay, that's who I have. She has like a, you know, these polka dotted, it's like an apron that's polka dotted.
Right, yeah,
okay.
That's my grandma.
All right, I have her.
Okay.
All right, the only message now, she's not giving me a message because she thinks these questions are funny. She's laughing at something that goes on between you and your mother. She's laughing about it. So whatever the unresolved issue between you and your mom that 10 years later you're still working through,
mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not near as bad as it used to be. You're working through it. And if it's lighthearted from your grandmother, then it's time to forgive yourself. Okay, now in the book, I mean, I don't want to get into your personal business, but I got your grandmother telling you everything's okay.
Oh, okay.
But there is a technique that I put in the secrets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a technique that I used because of trans-dimensional communication, which is what George and I were talking about. There is possible, and it's not difficult, and it's in the book. So get a copy of the secrets and turn to that page about, it's called If It's True, What Shall We Do? I think it's chapter 16 or 17. And it'll give you a way you can spend some time with her.
Okay.
But you're almost through it. You can hear it in your voice that it's not near as burdensome, but she's okay.
How come so many people are fascinated with death?
Well, because it's the unknown. It's the great mystery. It also has religions, institutions, and governments forming a perspective that affects you.
And it gets us all, doesn't it?
Sure. It's the greatest part of, you know, it's the best part of this whole deal. It's when you get to leave.
You sometimes go to sleep thinking this is it tonight?
I've seen too many of those days, George. I saw one of those days 3 weeks ago.
What happened?
Got on an airplane to fly back. Since my father passed away, it's the first time that my brother and my sister and the family were getting together. So it didn't feel very good, but I got on an airplane and I flew back to South Carolina. And I didn't feel good on the airplane.
You still have those bad days?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
And I got on the airplane, and I thought that my head was going to explode. We get to South Carolina. I go to the doctor. I do a blood test, which is my PT that shows how much coagulant's in my blood.
Yeah.
The average person's is 13 points. Mine's supposed to be 17 to 21 points because of the prosthesis valve, and I have to take Coumadin. Mine was at 103.
Oh, my gosh.
That means there's no water. It's black water. It's not clotting. There's no back pressure. And I knew, George, here the hell I go again, because it all happened just like this in 1997, and the doctor called. I came home. The doctor called at the greatest cardiologist. I've been with him for so many years. They called and had the paramedics come in.
But it was nothing?
Well, I didn't go to the hospital because they'll kill you at a hospital. I got in the bed, and I wrote it out, and I thickened my blood, and I got it down, and I didn't have any aneurysms or subdurals.
I was talking last week, Daniel, that we start with 9 lives, and you give up a few every once in a while. How many have you given up?
Well, I think I'm down to about 2.
That's it. We'll be back in a moment. More phone calls. Don't go away. Daniel, what do you think about reincarnation?
Well, there is nothing that ever happened in a near-death experience that gave me any point of relationship to reincarnation. I mean, I had nothing that would. I saw that we were multidimensional beings. We live in realities. There are multitudes of heaven. We are powerful spiritual beings. All of that. But no reincarnation. But when you sit around with Winifred Lucas and Brian Weiss, and you look at these people and the research that they're doing in regression therapy. Winifred Lucas, I mean, wrote the book in it. And Brian has created just a straight psychiatrist doing age regression, and the work's done in England and in Germany. There is too much information, George, to not reinforce there's some validity to it. I mean, I know the cell memory theories, but, you know, I have to conclude that we live multiple lives. I don't buy all that karma business that we got to keep coming back till we get it right. And, you know, everybody tries to make everything punishment. And I just don't think that that's what it is. But I believe that there are the opportunities to have multiple lives in this dimension, but also other lives in other places also.
All right, back to the phones. East of the Rockies, get us started. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, where are you calling from?
This is Sherry from Michigan, Southfield.
Oh, I know Sherry. Southfield. Wow. I used to work right in Southfield, Sherry.
Oh, wow.
At WJBK Television.
Well, I want to compliment both of you. I want to tell you how much I've loved both of you for so long. And I need to say a few things real quickly. First of all, my mom has been in a nursing home, but I took care of her for 5 years. And I know, according to Dr. Batman Gelage and Dr. Lorraine Day, they say every single illness, 99% of the time, can be reversed if the person gets enough water and nutrition. So even when she was in the nursing home, when I got her even just 2 or 3 glasses of water before eating in the morning, then she would sit up straight and she was able to think better and she got color in her face. But I can't be there all the time, and I'm very concerned. I was hoping if you could please have them back on your show again, George, and also Hans Christian King. I never got his number. I thought if your person can get it to me. But also I wanted to ask if you and Dannon would possibly be able to send some of your wonderful energy and a prayer, not only, you know, to people who are like my mom in a nursing home, but for all of us, because I also have been listening to your commercials on the air, George, saying that this thing about 9/11, I have all kinds of information from them and others that it looks like it was all the election was rigged and 9/11 was planned by George Bush, you know, contrary to what I've heard other people say that it wasn't. But I thought if we could turn this around and get Kerry in office, I think that we could prevent nuclear war.
Hold on. The election's over.
Well, I mean, they could still turn it around,
no,
though, because the electoral college.
Kerry is all done.
I heard the electoral college is not meeting till December 13th.
No, it's not going to happen. Was there election fraud? Possibly in some areas. How widespread was it? Not enough to overturn the election. Who did it? Probably both sides.
But if he would have a nuclear war, and
there's not going to be a nuclear war.
Well,
don't worry about that.
Cheney on TV was saying about a month ago that it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And I feel that the way that they are such nasty people, the both of them, and I thought...
Okay, this is not a night for politics. You need a question for Daniel?
Well, I was hoping for this prayer to save our
you
world.
You got that prayer.
Aaron.
Yeah, no question. It's a part of my everyday life. So if it goes to the website, that means there's a prayer group that will put that prayer out for you.
Okay, very good. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You are on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
Hi, Daniel. How are you doing this evening?
Doing
hey, how are you?
Thanks.
Good, thank you.
Who is this?
I've also had a near-death experience.
All right, and where are you calling from and your name, sir?
Oh, Rob from Newcastle, Pennsylvania.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Rob. I got a good friend, like a brother, Bulldog, that lives near you, Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, if he's in the fireworks business, I might know him. I got blown up.
Well, he's in the trucking business.
I got to see myself flatline. The last thing I saw was him rubbing the paddles together.
What happened?
I was doing a fireworks display down in Maryland and had a shell a little bit bigger than a basketball blow up 6 inches from my face. But the reason I was calling was I was wondering if you were familiar with the George Washington prophecy.
Yeah, I am. George Washington, of course, had visions. Some of them pretty startling visions, Daniel.
I have a book
about the future.
Yeah, I have a book by Daniel Lyon VII, who's, I guess, great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was a colonel who fought with Washington from the French and Indian Wars on.
Right.
And one of the interesting things, George, I even thought he might be a good guest.
Yeah.
I listen every night, but it was interesting in the book. It said a pact with God had been established, as almost all the founding fathers and signers of the Constitution were deeply religious men. And, you know, there were three catastrophes or potential catastrophes for the country. And we're at that point where I guess he believes this is the third. And it can go either way. And it depends, like Daniel says, having faith and that I think in a way, while I feel bad that the woman that previously called, you know, thinks that there's a lot of evil in the White House, I think that the red is the folks of faith, where blue is more secular, and Europe is secular, and we see what's happening there. And I just wondered if, you know, what you guys thought of that. I mean, because it has been witnessed. In fact, Washington, son of the Republic. And,
well, but Robert, I believe this because just without George Washington, as you tell me, you and George tell me this George Washington prophecy, this is where I saw the world would be at 2004. This is where 1975 it said it would be, and it's here. So what we all have to realize, listening to this show, and everybody, and we have to tell people, we have to realize it's up to us. It's in our hands as the human species whether we're going to go into a war against terrorism that will literally consume us, or we will come common sense and really look at how to handle this with honor and dignity and grace and trying to find the answers to it. I believe that we will win. I wouldn't have stayed here 30 years and gone through what I've gone through if I just didn't think it with all my heart. And the thing that stops, we start by caring a little bit more about the person next to us. And this will begin this transformation. I know it will.
What about that 2012 Mayan calendar ending? What do you think of that?
Me? Asking me?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's, in the way the calendar's structured, which is the way that how many different calendars, there's probably 13 calendars within the calendar, and it depends on which one that you're reading, the years or the millenniums. But I believe it shows that the Mayans were very astute mathematicians in dealing with time and factors and millennia and 26,000-year cycles, and they had layers of, you know, mental, emotional, ethereal, the upper world and the underworld, which really means they knew something about the spiritual consciousness of the real, true way we are, multidimensional. Now, I'm not really sure if, when you look at the calculations and the translation done by this French guy, the French and the English guy, you know, it holds water to be an exact moment of the change in history for the Mayan, but I don't believe it's that end of time perspective for us, but I think that's around 214. This world will change so dramatically in no matter what, it's going to change. Every sign is there. It's us being prepared for this change and being aware of how to adapt to it. That's why I write the books. And, you know, that's why I try to put this stuff out there, because I've already seen it. And by strengthening people's lack of, to lessen their fear of death and to strengthen their belief in themselves and to work in groups, to be a conscious movement, is the way that we'll change it. And I believe we'll do it.
Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, is this me?
It is you, wherever you may be. Where are you?
Well, I'm just a little bit north of the guy from Newcastle. I'm in Mayfield, Pennsylvania.
Okay, go ahead. And what's your first name?
Do you know Bulldog?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I was listening, though. I was calling about my late husband.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently was a little bit psychic, but the things he used to tell me I'd never heard of before, but I believed him. He had a massive heart attack in 85 that destroyed over a third of his heart. He should never have lived through. And
maybe it was just your love that held him on.
Well, it was 6 months after we finally got married.
Okay, well, there's the answer. Love finds a way.
Well, I think so, because I think he was my soulmate. But anyway, he said
I'm
the
married
only reason,
to my soulmate, so I understand perfectly.
And we just got cheated out of it. But I'm counting on this having more time together eventually. But he said the only reason he lived through it is he went to this place where he called his third eye, and he'd point to his forehead.
Yeah, pineal gland.
Well, I've done a lot of research on this since then, and I believe it now, but I'd never heard of it then. And nobody understood why he lived through it. He was being treated for something else in the hospital at the time. But they told him he'd only live 3 to 5 years, and he lived 3 years. And he was angry and scared and the whole bit, the whole time.
Did he describe something that happened in the experience?
When he had the heart attack?
Yeah.
No, he just said he was in this spot in his head. He never really lost consciousness, but he was in this spot in his head that actually
his third eye.
How about a question, though, before we run out of time here?
Well, I wanted to say he, 3 years, right before, a week before he died, his whole attitude changed, and I believe he had some kind of experience. He became serene. He became not scared.
I can answer it. Someone had come to tell him it was time to go home. When you have this kind of situation, then all of a sudden there's serenity and they're not talking much. Someone who has loved them has come to take them.
There are helpers, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I get people halfway across, and then there are those on the other side that meet them. I don't want people trapped in the blue-gray place like I write in The Secrets. I don't want this to happen. And I've created this program, George, so that those people who didn't get a chance, you know, like the veterans, to really decide at their end of their life, I can help them not get trapped in that place. And, yeah, they're helpers on both sides. So someone came to see him to tell him it was going to be okay and to tell him when he was leaving and that they would be there to go with him.
Okay. Thanks for passing that on to her. Let's go to our wild card line. Who's up next? Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, where are you?
In Vancouver.
God, a lot of calls from Vancouver.
Huh?
Washington or British Columbia?
No, British Columbia.
Okay.
Hey, Daniel.
Hey.
You know who I am.
Sure. You got back from, did you get back from your mom's, from your dad's?
Yeah. Guess what?
Question. We're running out of time.
Well, I'm just curious, Daniel. My brother died 2 weeks after that. And I was just wondering about if someone, like, commits suicide.
No, let me tell you what to do. After this show is over, tomorrow I will call you.
All right.
Okay? Now, don't be doing anything crazy. I understand that's both all three of them, your mom, your dad, and your brother. I know how tough that is.
Tough situation for a
yeah,
person.
Yeah, so you make sure that you call me tomorrow. Or I'll call you tomorrow.
You've got her number?
I know, absolutely.
You know who she is?
Absolutely.
Huh? Okay, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, George, great show.
Great
teachers on your show, man.
Yeah, we sure do.
You learn something every day, and I wanted to ask him about a girlfriend that passed away that I was enamored with that came to me the night or the night after she committed suicide. And I also wanted to make a comment to just to help Daniel basically teach more. And my great-grandfather was a Royal Engineer and Grand Master with the Masons. And I just want to say that what Alex Jones is all about is absolutely true. Bush, fix the election. You're going into Iraq to grab a Stargate that you're not going to get. And the whole voting thing was bent, worked over, and you guys really got the short end of the stick. And I'd just like to say thank you so much, Daniel, for bringing that up. I thank your guest the other night, the Mars guy, for bringing it up about Alex Jones.
Jim Mars?
Huh? No, the guy that was...
That's Hoagland you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's really happened, George. And I just, you know, it's Kennedy's assassination, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, John Lennon.
Yeah, but hold on, listen.
The Oklahoma City bombing, it's all a floor show to start a jihad, to bring this country, your country down.
Hold on. What does that have to do with Daniel Brinkley?
Well, it was probably one of the prophecies. But I agree that there are things that are happening that we have the power to change. We just look at all this information and work in groups, just like what the After Dark letter, like being a member of Compassion in Action. Because they're in groups, we can focus on it and we can really change it. I believe a lot of these conspiracy theories that I hear have a lot of points of truth in them. I don't believe all the stuff I hear. But I've been around too long, and I sit and listen, and I know that parts of these are true. But the real true part about it is people discovering themselves. And if we're really smart, everything that's thrown against us to try to stop us only empowers us to achieve it faster.
I'll tell you what, though, just the nature of just some of the last few calls, still a lot of healing out there, man.
People need it. George, this was devastating. It's devastating, and now the reasons like Ohio and Mississippi and the counting, and you hear all those stories. But it's time for us to wake up, and you're doing that. These shows, and Lisa and Stephanie and Tom and the people that help you, and Heidi Beatty, the person that is the absolute goddess running the Twilight Brigade, these people together, and what we're trying to do, we will change consciousness. We will not allow it to, as no matter what games are played against us, especially in healthcare, we will not allow this to happen. We won't allow it, so let's quit complaining and pull ourselves together and stay close. And thank you so much for calling.
Website, Danyon.com, linked up with coasttocoastam.com. Read all about the information on his latest book.
Number?
Yeah, The Secrets of the Light. Yeah, give it out. Go.
It's 803-593-0355. If there's some questions about what, you know, because people may not have gotten to it that they could see.
One more time.
803-593-0355. You're calling mail.
All right. Thanks, Daniel.
George, thank you, and thank you so very much.
Take care of yourself.
Bless everybody.